Welcome to She Is Never Lost, But At Least She Has Wine, a podcast made just for you. Your host is Felicia Stitzel, world traveler and influencer, professional photographer, sommelier, Navy veteran, and mom. Tune in every Thursday for solo episodes where she shares her life story and a wine highlight. Pour yourself a glass and let's dive in. Greetings and welcome to another episode of She Is Never Lost, But At Least She Has Wine. As we are coming to the end of season one, I hope that you guys have been enjoying this particular podcast and everything that has been shared. All of the wine, the stories, the emotions, the insight, and everything in between. I am definitely excited and surprised in a small way that I have made it to almost the end of season one. Of course, we're not there yet. We've still got one more episode. But when I first started off on this podcast, I was very excited about it. And I, you know, loved the idea of it. I loved all the stories I was coming up and sharing. And then, of course, life happens. And that's when you have to learn how to dig deep and decide that if it's really important, you're going to keep going with it. And so despite it all and multiple trips back to the United States now, in fact, I'm recording this hours before driving up to go get on a plane to go back to the United States. So there's definitely, I feel like, a level of dedication in this particular episode. This week, I'm going to be sharing a story that is, of course, near and dear to my heart, but it has to do with the wine that I'm highlighting this week, which is an Italian wine, not exactly from the same region of, but it is still, of course, a beautiful Italian wine that's not terribly far from where in Italy I am sharing my story from. The wine that I'm highlighting this week is a Pieve Castello. It's a Chianti from Dimensione di Origine Controllo di Garanzia, which basically means that there is the wine region of Chianti. Now, for the longest time, I thought Chianti was a grape. And then I found out that I was wrong for years, including both times I have actually been to Italy. I know, shame on me. I did not know that Chianti was not a grape. I thought that when you were ordering a Chianti, that it was going to be, like, I knew it was from Tuscany. And I just kind of went from there. And that's about it. That's all I knew. I know I need to go back to Italy actually knowing as much about wine as I do now. That's the plan, is hopefully I'll be able to make it back to Italy here very soon. But of course, everything's just kind of on pause for a little while. We'll see what happens in the next few months, but fingers crossed and staying hopeful. So talking about Chianti, Chianti is actually, it's an appellation. And it's a controlled area where, and like if you ever see on a label Chianti Classico, that means that there are historical lands that those grapes were grown in. Generally, a Chianti is actually Sangiovese, which is exactly what this one is that I'll be sharing today. And Sangiovese is like the all-time classic Chianti Tuscan red grape. And depending on where the grape is sourced from within Tuscany, you can either have the deep, deep reds, the really, really dark, super fruity, super tannic red wines. Or you can get something that's going to be a light ruby color, heavy in the fruit flavors. And that is definitely one thing that I love, is that within one region of wine territory, like Tuscany, you can still have such crazy diversity in the grape itself, as well as the flavors, the color, the smells, everything that can be changed within a wine other than the grape itself can be completely different. So in the region of Chianti, you can find two different classifications generally. I mean, there are still levels on the label that you can see that talks about like longer periods of time in the bottle, higher quality grapes, you know, those are ones that I'm learning a lot about European wine labels, and there is so many little details to learn. It's not just like a wine from Oregon that says that it's from the coast or that it's from the valley, you know, that's the Willamette Valley. Like there's, it's very straightforward in the United States and in many New World wine regions. It's very cut and dry, I would say. It makes the label a lot easier and user-friendly for people who maybe don't know as much about wine. So they are buying a lot of the information just of whatever's on the label. So, of course, new wine regions, they made it easier for people who aren't as educated or aren't as in the wine industry. And it just made it more consumer-friendly. An old world country, though, they have had laws since basically Moses about their wine country and their wine rules and their laws and restrictions. And I don't think that they will be seeing those change anytime soon because, well, they haven't changed for a very long time. And I don't probably anticipate them changing ever. I mean, it's why broke it or why fix it if it's not broke? So now after that very long explanation about wine and Tuscany and Chianti and all of those things, let's actually talk about the wine. This wine is one of the lighter of the regions of Sangiovese. It's a really beautiful ruby color and it looks very light. So let's see how it smells. Oh my God. Okay, I love Sangiovese. Before I even knew what Sangiovese was as a grape varietal, I love Sangiovese because it, even though it looks light, the smell, the nose on this wine is so powerful. You can smell blackberries and black cherries and raspberries and peppers, and you can smell like fresh cut grass and a heavy oak smell to it with like a hint of vanilla. I mean, the layers of the first, secondary, and tertiary smells that are on this wine are absolutely phenomenal. Even though it's light in color, like when I first poured it, I was like, man, this is going to be a lighter wine. So I wasn't expecting it. And now here, even as I am swirling it through my glass, the legs coming down the sides of the glass are so dominant and thick, and it's just gorgeous. For those who don't know, by the way, the legs on your wine is like when you swirl your wine around your glass, you can see like the drip lines coming down the sides of your glass from the wine. And like the slower the drip is, the longer the lines last, you can actually tell a lot about the wine just from that. So when somebody says, look at the legs on that wine, they are talking about something in the glass, not on the grapevine, which is what I thought for years before I was educated. So if you did not know that, here's a little tidbit of knowledge. Actually, another good rule of thumb about learning about the legs is that the slower it kind of drains down your glass and the thicker the legs are, that actually can tell you a lot about the alcohol content. So this wine is a 12%, which is actually a medium wine because the higher alcohol content is like above 13.5. So this is still technically counted as a medium wine for its alcohol content. Now that we've gone over the beautiful smell, it's just so powerful. Like the fact of how powerful that smell is amazing. And I did not decant this wine. You can decant it. It would taste very good being decanted. I used one of my fancy aerators, and even with that, It is bringing out so many flavors on the nose, which is amazing. So now we get to the taste. You know what's so interesting is that even though it had so much on the nose, you would think that it was going to be a very, very strong bodied red wine. But like I talked about with the alcohol, it's still technically a medium bodied wine. And you can taste that medium body. So it is actually very light. It's light on the tannin. So it does have kind of like a sort of like acidic kind of aftertaste. But it's almost, I mean, it's all berries. Like all I can taste is, once again, those raspberries, black cherries, blackberries, a little bit of strawberry with like an after hint of vanilla, like just the slightest little hint right at the very end. But once again, it is a medium-bodied wine, so the flavor doesn't linger for a long time, which is actually really perfect because, of course, where it was grown in Tuscany, the summers are very hot. And when you want to still love and drink your beautiful red wine, you don't want it to be heavy, especially when it's hot outside, which is why I think that the Italians, I mean, they just nailed this one on the head because it is perfect. You get all the fruit, you get all the flavors, you still get that wonderful red wine, but it's not heavy in its body. And you can sip it still while you're sitting out, enjoying the hot summer heat, and you're not going to feel like it's heavy and it's weighted on you, which makes it perfect. So now that we have covered the wine region of Chianti and a little bit of Italy, the legs of wine, the smell, and the taste of this particular Chianti, let's dive into the story. Floating paradise. Have you ever dreamed about a location, like your whole life, and then you go? This is how I felt the very first time, and thus far the only time, I have been to Venice. As you may have heard in previous episodes, I have mentioned my love and obsession a little with Venice. And the very first time that I actually got to go, it wasn't until I had gone to Italy for the second time and I was on my honeymoon with my husband, and it was one of our last stops before we came home. But this was a town, this was a place, this was a dream that I had had since I was 7 years old. And I remember walking out of the train station, the St. Marco train station, and it takes you right out onto the Grand Canal of Venice. And then when I walked out, I hadn't even made it down the stairs before my husband is laughing at me because I am doing the nerdiest, geekiest happy dance probably known to man. And I'm pretty sure that he laughed at me and then pretended not to know me shortly thereafter because, yes, it was a little embarrassing. But I was so excited to finally be there after literally decades of dreaming about finally coming to visiting this floating paradise, and then I finally made it. Now, this story could have gone one of two ways. It could have been I had dreamed about going for so long, I had built it up in my mind, and then I arrive and it becomes this big disappointment. You know, what do you do? Of course, that thankfully was not the case because, well, it is Venice. There were a few things that I definitely learned my lesson on because, once again, obviously, no roads. So, and we went Easter weekend. Easter weekend that the Pope was going to be there visiting in St. Mark's Square, giving his Easter service in the square. Yeah, I'm going to let that one sit in for a second. Thankfully, on actually Easter, we had avoided St. Mark's Square like the plague, legitimately like the plague. We went to opposite directions. That was actually the day that we decided to go out and visit some of the islands. And what was that so touching? Okay, there's going to be a lot of rabbit trails on this one, and I apologize, but it's a city that I get so excited about and one that I cannot wait to go back to visit. That I'm going to geek out about it and it's going to be okay. So the day that we decided to go out to all the islands, and the islands actually out there are, there's several of them are known for certain things. Like there's the Glass Island, there is the Lace Island. And then come to find out, of course, after I had gone, but thankfully, I feel like if I had gone then, I wouldn't have appreciated as much as I when I do go back. But there is also the Wine Island. Yep, Venice makes their own wine. They have an island that has a vineyard. totally the worst place you could think of to grow wine, because a lot of the islands, you know, they just do this thing called flooding. Flooding and vines don't really go well together, but they do it. They make it. And it's called a golden wine, like the golden wine of Venice. And of course, that just adds to the level of like, oh my God, factor. Because I mean, it feels like everything that when you're walking around Venice is like you're walking around in a dream, in this royalty. But at the same time, like it's a small town. You know, it's extensive as far as like getting around, because there's so many little tiny town, you know, roads and alleyways. And if you miss one, I mean, you could miss so much. And that's why I would definitely recommend that if you go, go get lost. Like that is a place that you put a pin on your phone about like where your hotel is, and then you just get lost, because you will find some crazy cool things to see. Now, rewinding from that particular rabbit trail and going back to the history of, I fell in love with Venice before I even knew what Venice looked like. When I was younger, my mom, she got me and all of my siblings, as part of our education, she got us these CDs, and they were about composers. You know, she had Tchaikovsky and Beethoven and Mozart and Vivaldi. I mean, she had the greats of these classic composers. But it wasn't just listening to the music. You know, for an 8-year-old listening to classical music, you kind of lose interest after the first hour and a half. So how do people in the educational world keep children engaged? They tell a story. So every single one of these composers, their music was paired with a story. So like for Tchaikovsky, it was he comes to America, and the whole time you're on a train with him, and he's talking about how he came up with music for and how he composed the Nutcracker. Like what inspired him? He's like the foods and the, you know, the coffee and the tea from China that I had tried and the flavors that it bounced off it. And like, he tells you the story. And then for Beethoven, the story is told from the perspective of a little boy who lived, it's called like, I think Beethoven Comes to Stay or something like that. But he talks about how Beethoven, he lived upstairs in his house and how he was so noisy and racket. And so the whole story is told from the perspective of the little boy who lived beneath Beethoven. And then as he came to understand more about the composer and his music and his deafness, it then became an appreciation. But the composer's music is being played all throughout these stories. And then my favorite was Vivaldi, of course. But it wasn't just Vivaldi. It was Vivaldi and the Mysterious Violin. And this entire story is set in the perspective of a little girl who went to the school of La Pietà, or La Pietà, there we go, sorry, excuse me, which is the school of the orphans. That historically, this is correct, that Vivaldi, he was one of the music teachers at. And so when we went to Venice, we went to La Pietà, and we went and we listened to a composer or a concert listening to Vivaldi. Like every single tick mark on this nerdy little girl's dream was like, coming true. Amazing. But the story was of this little girl, Katerina, and she comes to Venice scared and alone, and she goes. And she arrives during Carnival, which of course, then I became obsessed with visiting and going to Carnival one day. And I became obsessed with Venetian masks that became a part of that. And at the end of listening to this CD over and over and over again, I became so obsessed with just listening to the violin and wanting to play that I used to draw little violins on like my math homework and my tests, and anytime that I could try and convince my mom that I wanted a violin, I would draw it in my homework and my schoolwork at total random and listen to the CD at obsessive numbers. And then she ended up buying me a violin, and I played violin for years. But all of that started with a story. And isn't amazing about how much influence can be impressed upon the minds and hearts of the youth, of our youth. I think about that sometimes, about how a single story like that made such an impression. I mean, it was so defined to the things that I loved, and I still is. I still love listening to the violin. Lindsey Stirling, she's my girl. And then when I was pregnant with my daughter, I would listen to Lindsey Stirling, and that was the only time that my daughter would finally sit still in my tummy, because she would just sit and soak it up. And I still listen to her, and my daughter still loves it. My husband bought me another violin so that way I can continue to play. And when we went to Venice, it was like we finally made the full circle of the love and obsession track that I was on. And it all came together, you know? And I had worried that I was going to be hyping up. Because like I said, up until I got much, much older, I never even knew what Venice looked like. All I had was my imagination. And thankfully, the descriptions on these stories are so good. At one point, you can almost be in the gondola as Caterina is going down to La Pietà. And she talks about how, you know, you're turning down the alleyways into dark corridors and away from the music and away from the laughter, you know, going down these little canals. And that's exactly what happens, is that as you're going down these canals, if you're close to St. Mark's Square, it is very loud there. And as you start getting further and further away, suddenly the city starts to sound very empty. And the sound is being dampened by all of the, you know, denseness of how many houses are being built there. And suddenly the sound just gets lost going down these canals and these side alleyways. And then the city is silent. And when you actually go and you experience that, when you finally start walking away from all the sounds of the music and the laughter and the sounds of St. Mark's Square, and you start walking away and that silence starts encompassing you. Oh God, for me, that was like, I don't know if I could be any happier than at this moment, because I'm super geeking out. It was amazing. I mean, so to be able to experience this city, and it not just met my dreams and envisions and everything that I wanted it to be, you know, it surpassed all of them, because then I got to live this dream. But as I was writing the show notes for this particular episode, I started thinking, well, what would have happened if it didn't live up to it? How would I deal with that? How would, after decades of building up this particular place in my mind and in my heart and in my dreams and everything, like, what would I do if we ended up going and it was terrible? Like, I can't think of anything worse in my mind at that point than to go and it not live up to that standard. So then I started thinking about it and about how this happens a lot in our lives. Maybe not particularly with this example of going to Venice, but how we build things up in our minds with expectations of friends, of relationships, of jobs, of all of these different things that heavily influence our lives. When we start building them up in our heads and we start thinking about what we think it should be or how we think it's going to be for us, and then it doesn't live up to that standard, how do you react? A lot of times, people react in depression or anger. People react with completely reclusing themselves from trying new things again because it was such a letdown. Other times, they go on completely on the other end of the spectrum where they just try everything because they're like, well, if I had built that one up so long in my mind, like, and it didn't live up, that can't be it, right? And so I started thinking about this and really putting in a perspective about how do we deal with when something falls short of what we expected, and then how do we move on? There's been a lot of conversations in my life lately about expectations expectations of relationships and friends and how to deal with those. And I've definitely seen both sides of the spectrum where, you know, in a relationship, it's both, you know, there's two sides of every story. There's two sides of every relationship, which means that two people or more, if it's a group of people, whatever, you know, they both have to be or all have to be putting in the effort. Like one person cannot be showing up every time. But what if that's the expectation? What if that was the expectation that was set because there were incorrect perceptions or there were incorrect ideals because it had been built up in your mind or in someone's mind about how it should be versus having the conversation of what it is, about having the conversation about moving forward with your job and instead of just getting defeated and quitting, moving forward and asserting yourself, having the conversations. It's like if you didn't get, you know, picked for that promotion, why? Go ask the question, why didn't I get picked for that? What can I do to better myself? Instead of just getting angry and shutting down and then taking it out on yourself, basically, because or your work ethic or your showing up every day. You know, instead of being angry and like, well, I did the best I could and I showed up and but they're just being political or they're being this, they're being that, and I just didn't get picked for it because somebody else was playing favorites, da 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 da. And you know, unfortunately, that might be true. That might be true. I mean, hard truth. That might be true. And that sucks if that is true. But what if it isn't true? What if you didn't get picked for a promotion because you legitimately weren't showing up in the way that they were expecting you to? And you didn't know that. That's what they were expecting. Once again, it comes back to having that conversation. Conversation with yourself, with your peers, with your friends, your family, your relationships, your everything. I've said pretty much my whole life that I truly believe that a conversation can fix anything because I've seen it. I've seen how a conversation can change the entire trajectory of someone's life. A conversation can save someone's life. It can save your job. It can save your relationship. It could save everything. Having these kinds of conversations. But for me, going back to, of course, the root of the story here, was managing that expectation. Now, of course, I did not manage it at all when we arrived in Venice. I wanted to live it all up. I wanted to soak it all in. I wanted to stand at the front of those little taxi boats and just let the sea salt spray against my face as we were entering into the Grand Canal and as we were going to St. Mark's Square and as we were searching for our hotel. I didn't want to have an expectation. I just wanted to live. I wanted to be in the moment. I wanted to experience every single aspect that Venice had to give because I knew my time was so short. And that's the other end of that coin. You know, I've talked about it many, many times on this podcast about time and how precious it is and how sometimes you might have to get out of your own way to enjoy yourself. Sometimes you have to let go of expectations of what you think it should be and just embracing it for what it is. Maybe then you won't get disappointed or upset. Maybe then you can experience a location or a situation or experience in a whole new way that you never would have had before because you decided to let go. Going back to one of my little side rabbit trails about getting lost, I wanted to share on that specifically because it ties into this whole, you know, letting go of your expectations and just living in the moment. And part of what it was for me and being in Venice, of course, with my husband and my best friend, he let me just go get lost. And as you see, there is a theme to this. Since she's never lost. But you know what? I've been lost. I've been lost emotionally and mentally. I've been lost physically. I have physically gotten lost many times. But it's also letting go to allow yourself to get lost. It took a long time for me to not be like the super travel control freak. And not so much the sense like if we go on a trip, it's my way or the highway kind of crap. It was more just making a structural plan, like making sure we had a place to sleep. And if there were things that required tickets, to make reservations. But then outside of that, just letting go. Go on that exploration. Go get down and hop on a train and just take it to a random stop and then just get off and see what happens. Go down a random path in the tiny streets of Venice and just wander through that entire labyrinth of a city and just get lost. We found some of my favorite shops that I saved my, I have them in a box. I saved all of their business cards so I could go back one day and try and find them again. But we found some amazing little shops and cafes and things that once you leave the beaten path, you have no idea what you are going to discover. It could be something magical, but you have to let yourself go. You have to allow yourself to get lost to appreciate that, to leave the itinerary at home. So my life lesson for this particular episode is about expectations, conversations, and letting go. All of these things play into a factor of finding your personal place, finding a place where you can be happy, and your happiness is not dependent upon someone else. Your happiness is not based on your best friend, because as we all know, friends come and go. And true relationships can make it back, but sometimes they don't. And you have to be happy with yourself. It's the same with relationships. Like, I know that my happiness is not dependent upon my husband. It's like, I have found a way in my life to be happy on my own and on my, like, by myself. However, I appreciate that so much of my happiness is tied within the life that I have chosen for myself and that we have built for ourselves. But I can't depend or make sure that I only can be happy because somebody else is happy, and I have to be make that person happy for me to be happy. That's just not how it works. It's about showing up and having those conversations even when they suck. About relationships, about your friends, about your jobs. I've had to say a lot of goodbyes lately, but I know that none of them are true goodbyes. It's only a see you later. And a lot of times, most people, when they think that they're going to be moving halfway across the world from their friends, that they have this expectation that, oh, they're going to get depressed because now they're never going to speak to each other and it's going to be different. Yeah, it is going to be different. It's going to be very different. Last night I had to say good, see you later to a very dear friend of mine, and her and I only recently became friends, but it was like fast and furious friends. And I had to say see you later to her, and it broke my heart. But I also know that that's not going to be the end of it. Is our friendship going to be different because we're not seeing each other for Thursday wine anymore? Or having random adult sleepovers where our children are downstairs? Yeah. It's going to be different, but it's not going to be gone. It's about adapting. It's about making sure that you both show up. And from there, you have no idea how much better your life can be because you set the expectation and you had the conversation and you finagled your way through a labyrinth of life and you came out on the other side with a lot more self-discovery. So, thank you for joining me this week on She Is Never Lost, But At Least She Has Wine. I hope that this story resonated with you a little bit. My life lesson was on point because, boy howdy, the timing of this is really on point. And I hope that you have a place, whether it's a physical place or an emotional place like I had for Venice, and that it doesn't let you down, and that you get to do your super nerdy, crazy happy dance inside or outside because you made it. Physically, emotionally, mentally, whichever location that you're dreaming to be, that you make it. And that you get to do that dance after you have made it. Tune in with me for next week as we close out of season one. And as we start getting ready for season two. Season two is going to be all about travel. Locations, tips, experiences that I've had, some food, wine, of course. It's going to be fantastic. So definitely stay tuned for season two as it's coming in a couple weeks. But I thank you for taking this journey with me. It has been a crazy road, but one that I have been so grateful for. And I'm grateful for each of you for sitting through all of these stories and taking this journey with me. Cheers.